Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is Anupama Sen, and I'm a senior research fellow here at the Institute. I'm today joined by Malcolm Kay and David Robinson, both senior research fellows here at the OIES, to discuss their paper titled The Limits of Auctions: Reflections on the Role of Central Purchaser Auctions for Long-Term Commitments in Electricity Systems, that was recently published by OIES. So welcome, Malcolm and David.
Thank you.
So, to start with, can you summarize the context in which auctions have risen to become such a popular instrument of meeting government's policy objectives on electricity? What market failures are auctions specifically addressing?
Well, there are two main market failures. The first one is that there isn't a sufficiently effective carbon tax to encourage the investment in low carbon generation that governments want. So they've been supporting low carbon generation and in particular renewables by other means. But ironically, that's led to a second problem, which we've called the broken markets problem. These new intermittent renewables, which governments are supporting, don't really fit into the traditional electricity market structures based on marginal cost, because in most cases they are zero marginal cost. That has an effect in depressing electricity prices, which in turn means that no new investment, whether in renewables or in conventional generation, can be supported by the market. So governments are intervening yet again to offset the effect of their earlier intervention and support reliability or capacity in many cases. And the reason we think it's a problem, I think, is that it tries to reconcile the need for support with the need for competition. In the first stages, governments supported, for instance, low carbon generation by, in some cases, less market-oriented mechanisms, fixed price feed-in tariffs, and that could lead to prices that were too high in the sense that the costs fell quickly, so governments were in effect overpaying. And governments were trying to resolve that problem by making their support dependent on competition and hope that by that they could reconcile intervention and competition. But it would have been more sensible to address the underlying market failure.
Right. So in your paper, you say the widespread use of one-sided auctions is a relatively recent phenomenon and it raises a number of questions, such as how should we view this development, whether auctions are a useful market-based tool to complement other methods of resource development, and whether they're a second best solution. So I think you've answered some of that already, but if I could follow up again and say, why do you think it's timely now to raise and explore these questions?
We think it's timely because we think governments sort of think they found the magic bullet which resolves these issues and reconciles intervention and market forces. And if you look at what's happening across the world, the use of auctions for particularly encouraging new resource investment is spreading very, very widely. In the past 10 years or so, the number of countries adopting auctions has increased over sevenfold. So we're finding that just about everyone, just about everywhere is using this, and our worry is that they think, well, we found the solution, so everything's okay, so we don't need to think about any alternatives.
All right. So that brings me to my next question, which is, what motivated you to write this, if I could call it a critique, on the limits of auctions? Because haven't auctions in electricity yielded some phenomenally successful outcomes? For instance, in renewable energy, in terms of speeding up technological innovation and lowering costs.
I think it's important to say that we're not opposing auctions. We think that they can be very valuable, but it depends on the circumstances. And as Malcolm said, there are circumstances such as the need or the policy decision to promote technologies which are not yet economic, renewables. And there are also consequences of that, which are the decline in the price of electricity, which makes it necessary somehow or other to make up for what might be called missing money. So auctions can be very helpful. They help in different ways. One is that they enable governments to more or less assure that the capacity will be built. the capacity that they want will be built. It helps also through putting, if you want, some kind of transparency into the price setting mechanism. That is, people who compete are revealing, in some sense, their costs. And in that way, it's helpful to put downward pressure on prices through competition. It's also important for the sellers because it gives sellers some certainty about their revenue streams, and in that respect, it lowers their cost of capital. So there are many, if you want, benefits to auctions in these circumstances, and so we don't want to suggest that they aren't valuable. However, as Malcolm says, the challenge is to not think of them as a permanent solution. They actually reflect certain circumstances, and when those circumstances don't exist, they may not be the right answer. It's important to identify some of, if you want, to balance the argument a bit to show what are some of the drawbacks or some of the limits of auctions. One point to make is that the decline in the cost of renewables that one sees through auctions is not entirely due to the auctions themselves. That demand side is important, but the real reduction is happening on the supply side. It has to do with scale economies, it has to do with new technologies, it has to do with competition happening at the manufacturing level. So what we're seeing through the auctions is the result of competition, technology development that is happening on the supply side rather than just a consequence of auctions. But I think the other I want to make, if you want, a couple of other points. The one specifically has to do with the complexity of auctions and thinking that governments or anybody, frankly, can design an auction which will have an optimal outcome. Has to realize or should realize the extent to which the complexity of the system and the extent to which getting it right is difficult. I want to give an example from Colombia, which has a very well-designed resource adequacy auction, an auction for what's called firm energy. In this case, all different sources of generation can compete for what amounts to a long-term contract to receive an option fee, that's like a capacity payment, in return for being available to generate whenever the price goes above a certain level, sort of a scarcity price, and to sell energy at that scarcity price rather than the higher price. What has happened in Colombia, remember I should say that in Colombia it's a hydro system, so 85% of the generation is normally hydro-based. But in El Nino years, when there's very little rainfall, generation from hydro can fall to 65%. So this gap needs to be made up by firm energy backup. And in Colombia, this has primarily been through a gas and coal-based generation. The problem emerges when the emergency actually occurs, when there is a scarcity of hydro. Now, in 2015-16, there was a long period of dryness, and the result was that prices spiked very high for a long time, and the plants that had been receiving the capacity payments, the option fee, simply refused to supply because the cost of purchasing the fuel for their generation was so high that they figured that they were going to go bankrupt. So, in spite of having all the systems supposedly working well, at the end of the day, it didn't work. Okay, so that's one example. But what did work was the call on a sort of emergency demand, which had not been included in the auction, but where the government had to fall over backwards in order to convince people not to consume electricity. So the message here is simply the complexity of it makes it extremely hard to get right, and that you should always be including in any of these auctions the demand side, okay? And that if there's a so-called winner's curse, which is what this generator was facing, it's a curse for the entire country, okay? That the third thing I want to say is that we're also talking about government incentives. And I think Malcolm mentioned that our primary concern is that in a competitive market, it's the investors who take the risk, and they, if they make a decision which is wrong, they pay the price. But when governments are making decisions, if they make a mistake, it's the consumer who pays. So we're concerned about the incentives properties there. But we're also concerned about about, if you want, governments having intent to use the auctions in order to select a winner. Sometimes it's explicit, for instance, in choosing renewables, we say we want this type of renewable, but sometimes it's a kind of a hidden subsidy. This is particularly true in the case of interruptible customers in some countries. The government is effectively overpaying those industrial customers through an auction by defining the product in such a way that only a few bidders can bid. So again, the main message here is that one has to recognize that auctions aren't entirely responsible for the reduction in costs. Secondly, that it's very complex, easy to get wrong. And third, that there are government incentive problems here.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, that brings me to a follow-up question. And there's been a lot of concern about this in governments around the world. Are some of the price reductions that we're seeing for renewable energy across the world sustainable, or are they reflective of the winner's curse that you just mentioned and that you also discuss in your paper?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, we don't know in any specific instance whether the bid will be realized, whether the investor will actually go ahead. There are instances where they don't go ahead because the bids were simply uneconomic. But I think if you look at it across the world, it's clear that prices are falling because costs are falling. And so I see every reason to expect prices to continue to fall. I'm less worried about the winner's curse in the case of a renewable auction than I am in the case of reliability auctions, like we saw in Colombia. So I think that the biggest problem that governments face when the generators who've made the bid don't actually build it is that they don't meet some target. In the European Union, governments are very worried about meeting a target for 2020, but it doesn't really change the world. I think what's much more serious is if the winners effectively don't deliver on a reliability promise.
Okay. So let's go on to another question. Why are auctions in the electricity sector different from what you call traditional auctions in your paper?
Well, I suppose the classic example of a traditional auction is a fine art auction, the sort of thing everyone's familiar with, where someone's selling a Picasso, a Christie's or Sotheby's or whatever. And that has two structural characteristics. Firstly, it's a one-off event. There is a particular object being sold. It's also one-sided. There are many people interested in buying it, but only one person selling it. Now, electricity auctions are very different from this. There is no pre-existing object, and as we've been discussing, you have to define an object. The nature of the traditional auction is that you would normally hold one where the object concerned is, the term used is idiosyncratic, that it's very difficult to value because it's a one-off, like the Picasso painting, which is not the same as another Picasso painting. So you can't just derive its value from any outside source, and that it's scarce relative to consumer demand. There's lots of people who might want to buy it. Now, none of these features really apply to electricity. It's not idiosyncratic in that sense. Whether it's scarce relative to demand basically depends on the price. It's not intrinsically scarce, and there is no pre-existing object. So it's not entirely clear whether the traditional rationale for selling things by auction rather than in other ways really applies to electricity.
That's interesting. So could we talk a bit more about product definition? In your paper, you attribute the problems with product definition as one of the main reasons for the recent challenges that we've seen in the UK capacity market. Could you tell us a bit more about this?
Yes, I think, as I said, this is an intrinsic problem with electricity auctions. You have to define the product. Capacity, in this sense, doesn't really exist. The government had to define something, and it was really trying to meet peak demand. Now, when you get down to the definition, as David said, you may be effectively defining a certain object rather than all the other possible ways of meeting demand. For instance, in the capacity market, the basic structure was that the capacity had to be provided 4 years out, that is consistent with building a new plant. It had to have certain ramp-up rates, certain degrees of reliability, and so on. And that really defines a power station, not demand response. And that was one of the reasons for, in fact, it was the main reason for the challenge from a demand response provider to the UK capacity market, which went to the European Court, and the European Court said that the Commission and the UK needed to rethink. It's also the case that the UK government, in setting and specifying these things, essentially thought that it was underpinning investment in new combined cycle gas turbines. And in fact, that hasn't really happened. It got something which maybe it didn't really want in many of the cases, that it was sort of small diesel plants, which really were rather a bad idea in environmental terms. So when you try to define it, you can get both unintended consequences and you can restrict the playing field, so there's no level playing field, and so you don't get the best outcome.
That's interesting. So in your paper, you suggest that the incorporation of demand-side response alongside generation in auctions for resource adequacy could potentially protect the electricity system against relying entirely on conventional generation. But do you think that auctions can be designed and run to create a level playing field between demand-side response and generation capacity? For instance, is it possible to design an auction for flexibility from a wide range of sources?
Yes, I think the answer is one can do that. But let me first of all insist on the importance of the flexibility and demand side flexibility. The penetration of renewable, intermittent renewable energy, solar and wind, means that the supply side of the electricity sector is increasingly uncertain. The actual ability of the supply side to respond to changes in the temperature or in the sun, and on the demand side, all of the flexibility that was there on the supply side is increasingly eroding. So it's important to have flexibility in the system. Second is that demand side is now in a position to provide flexibility. And when I say demand side, I don't just mean consumption flexibility. I mean that on so-called distributed energy resources, which includes batteries, it includes own generation, it includes the ability to adjust your consumption. All of those together are, if you want, on the demand side. They're behind the meter, as some people say. So, the third reason why, you know, if you want to think of this in terms of its importance, demand side flexibility is important, is because the it's for the most part decarbonized, whereas the alternative flexibility would probably come from, say, a gas-fired power plant. Okay. And finally, the growth of distributed energy resources means that there's going to be an increasing need for flexibility on the local system, not just in the overall, not at the transmission or wholesale level. So I think it's important to say that already we have markets for flexibility, but consumers aren't allowed to play in them. Okay, so it's a fairly straightforward move without special auctions to enable consumers through aggregators to sell their flexibility to in existing markets. And secondly, that it is also, I think, now very important to design new similar markets at the local level, again, with the idea that consumers could play in them. Now, of course, what I'm saying is that the markets exist, let's use them, we don't have to redefine entirely the system to have an auction, but there may well be instances where auctions for flexibility are needed, in which case, for instance, if we were talking about resource adequacy or even something closer like reserves in shorter term, then we should be including both the DER, that is the distributed energy resource flexibility, as well as conventional flexibility.
So let's come back to the main argument once again. What would you say you are specifically critiquing in your paper? Are you critiquing auctions as an instrument? Are you critiquing the design of auctions or the role of the government in running auctions?
Well, it's not really any of these. I mean, auctions as an instrument, we're saying, do have their place. We don't go into the detail of auction design. We're not concerned about that sort of detail. And in the end, governments are going to have to stand behind these things because auctions are essentially designed to deliver public goods. So it's not these issues that we are really challenging. What we're challenging, as I think I mentioned earlier, was the over-reliance on auctions, the belief that this is now the standard tool for delivering investment in electricity.
Well, that brings me to my next question, because in your paper you use a very interesting term. You question whether we've reached peak auction, specifically for renewable power. So what do you mean by peak auction? And what comes next? What's the alternative?
Well, let me start by saying that why it is that we refer to peak, why do we refer to peak auctions? It's because, first of all, what do we mean? We mean a point at which auctions are either no longer growing, or they may actually stop becoming as important as they are now. They may start to wither away for certain technologies, in certain uses. Why do we say that? Well, specifically talking about renewables, what we see is that the cost of renewables has fallen significantly, and that there are countries where the cost of generating electricity through renewables is sufficiently low that at current prices, investors could very well proceed without an auction. So since auctions are a way to provide certain guarantees to investors, and the costs of those guarantees and the risks are passed on eventually to consumers, one asks why one would necessarily want to continue if they were no longer needed. Of course, investors would always like a subsidy or a guarantee, and there may be instances, as I said, we've said, where they would be justified. But that doesn't mean they would be justified forever if they weren't necessary. So an example of this is in Spain, where there are approximately 40 gigawatts of renewables which are ready to go, so to speak, which have permits for connection to the system, but the investments don't proceed, and one has to ask why. I mean, one possibility, which is raised by many people that I've spoken to, is that it's because the investors are waiting for the auction. So in a way, the auction is crowding out the investment that might otherwise be made, because why not proceed with support of the government if you can get it? Okay. Now, we then go on to talk about three conditions that would, if you want, when I say this, this idea of peak auction is just, it's not as if it's happened. We're starting to see the signs of it because of these cost conditions and because investors are saying, well, maybe I should proceed, but I'm not quite sure whether to wait. So what are the three conditions which would, if you want, confirm that we'd reach peak auction or very likely to start to decline in the use of auctions for renewables? And the answer is, first of all, that prices that people expect would be sufficient to finance the investment. And although today prices look very healthy in many markets in Europe, sufficiently to justify the investment, the question is what will happen in 10 years' time when the penetration of renewables starts to or continues to reduce the wholesale price? Will they be high enough down the road? So there is serious question mark there, but that's the first thing. Having a price forecast which gives investors confidence that they can get their money back without the auction. The second is that the terms of access and connection are fairly and transparently determined, that they aren't, if you want, only for those who win auctions, but also for those who don't. There is a concern that the grid company will be encouraged by the government to make it easier for those that win in the auctions than those who might proceed without an auction. And the third requirement is that the government states very clearly that they're no longer going to be subsidizing or guaranteeing returns on assets which are now competitive, but rather, or at least they're going to define what the limits are to the support that they're willing to give.
Well, how realistic do you think these conditions are? Do you think that these conditions can be met. Would it be fair to say that we have not reached peak auction and we never will reach peak auction? Because, for instance, governments frequently renege on announcements ending policy support. So what's your view on that?
Well, of course, it's always possible and it'll depend on the government. Some governments will have a bad reputation for reneging on their commitments. What is interesting is that I think that governments have learned from, you know, having reneged, that they had not better not do it again. So there's a serious penalty, although some people say it's not a serious enough penalty. But essentially, the idea is that if you are designing these because governments are never going to keep their word, that's not a very good reason to maintain auctions. I mean, however, I'm more concerned not about governments reneging and never being able to trust them. I'm more concerned about the design of the market and the price forecasting, because I can easily understand why investors may be reluctant to proceed if they have no idea what markets are going to look like in 5 or 10 years' time.
Okay. So let's talk about recent proposals to widen the scope of auctions. For instance, auctions for network expansion in order to secure the optimum mix of resources for the electricity system as a whole. What are your views on extending competition for the provision of infrastructure in this way?
Well, it's an attractive idea in principle, and it was one that was proposed in the UK in a recent review of the cost of energy by Dieter Helm. However, I think we should be very cautious once we look at experience in other areas with this sort of thing. David mentioned earlier the complexity of defining something as simple as reliability in the Colombian system. Once you're talking about network expansion, it gets very, very much more complicated. In principle, the rationale is strong that you leave it free to the bidders to come up with interesting new ideas for meeting the problem of balancing supply and demand, whether it be by demand response, by storage, by provision of new infrastructure. So in principle, you should get a better outcome, but it's very difficult to ensure you get the terms right because it's so complicated. And there is a rather cautionary tale in the UK in relation to franchising for rail infrastructure, which has met very high costs. We're talking about hundreds of millions in costs in franchising rounds for both sides. It's not been popular with the public and it's not being effective because it's almost impossible to hold bidders to their promises in the event. So I would say that experience suggests that it's a good idea in theory, but it's very, very difficult to make it work in practice.
So over the past 20 minutes or so, we've discussed a lot of issues, and I expect the ultimate question, which is what in your view would represent the optimum long-term solution for the sustainable low-carbon market of the future?
Well, I think the solution would have to come in addressing the two market failures I mentioned at the outset, finding a proper way of imposing a carbon constraint. We've given some reasons in our paper why carbon taxes might not be the answer. One alternative which has been proposed is a carbon intensity target, which would set a limit on the carbon intensity of electricity generation, declining, presumably in the case of the UK, to zero by 2050, which would give a very, very clear target to aim at. In terms of the other market failure, that is broken electricity markets, we've suggested a means of market reform which would separate the two sorts of generation, which have their different cost characteristics, and give consumers power to determine the degree of reliability they wanted, so they weren't simply having to bear the cost of government decisions.
Right. In your paper, you say for some purposes, continuous auctions are likely to be a permanent feature. But these should be adapted to reflect changing technologies and economics, and in particular to enable consumer participation. So I'd just like to come back to this issue of consumer participation. Wasn't consumer participation the original problem? And in that, liberalized markets failed to actively engage consumers, and auctions were effectively a way of circumventing this.
That is maybe true, but as we were saying earlier, we're going through stages in the development of electricity markets. In the electricity market of the future, I think everyone agrees that active consumer participation will not just be essential, but will be a very important feature, because consumers will increasingly be investing in their own generation. They will ideally be producing their own forms of demand response. Unless we can encourage active consumer participation of that sort, the cost of a decarbonized system would be very, very much higher. So instead of giving up on consumer participation, what governments should be trying to do is to encourage it through appropriate price signals and through engaging consumers, not in moving all decisions upstream into auctions run by the governments. It's no wonder that consumers have no interest in participation when the decisions are all being made elsewhere.
Right, so we're almost out of time, so I'd like to ask a final question, which is a broader question, really. Auctions have been a success in achieving government objectives on renewable addition in parts of the developing world. And as the penetration of renewables increases and these countries also start running into problems of resource adequacy, what lessons can other countries draw from recent experience in Europe?
Well, first of all, I think that the messages are the same in Europe and they're all over the world, which is that auctions can be valuable in certain circumstances. But they are not a panacea or a long-term solution. Okay, and but there are some characteristics of developing countries which make them sometimes more and sometimes less attractive. For instance, in countries where we have state or private monopolies, an auction for new generation from outside is a means of introducing competition at an early stage of if you want, liberalization. One might go no further, but at least it would bring in some additional capital and ideas in those countries where up to now it's been a vertically integrated monopoly. But at the other sort of the other side of the story is that much of the developing world lives in rural areas, where new commercial ideas on how to sell electricity and how to roll it out are far more convincing and, if you want, cheaper to introduce than large-scale central auctions for electricity, which probably won't ever get to those rural areas. So, I mean, the example which is often raised is in Africa is the idea that mobile telephony providers have an incentive to offer solar panels to, you know, small villages, which are then able to charge their mobile phones on their new electricity systems and to pay for the panels through their mobile phones. This is just an example, but in some countries, governments have found it far more attractive to, if you want, open the market up, possibly with subsidies, but essentially to do that rather than to have some central plan. So I would say, again, the main message here is that and one final point about auctions in developing countries is question of expertise. Also, in all countries, it's very important to have technical expertise to design an auction. As I said, in countries which have had good, I would say very good advice, they still have problems. So I wouldn't underestimate the difficulty of auctions. The final message, though, really is, as I said before, it's not a matter of them saying auctions are good or they're not good. It's recognizing when they're necessary, but not thinking they will always be the answer. And to recognize that they essentially shift risk to final consumers and away from investors. And that is a problematic to the extent that the incentives for the government when it's making its decisions, you know, are not to minimize cost and risk, but perhaps to have an easy life. So essentially what we're in favor of is shifting the risk back to the investors, not ignoring the benefits of some certainty about revenue, but recognizing that there's a balance to be met here.
So Malcolm and David, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed our conversation. That builds on your paper titled The Limits of Auctions. That can all be found on our website, www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to this podcast, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.